Bound. Welcome to Books and Beyond with Bound. I'm Tara Khandelwal.
I'm Michelle DeCosta.
And in this podcast, we uncover the stories behind some of the best written books of our time.
And find out how these books reflect our lives and our society today.
So tune in every Wednesday to enter a whole new world with a new author and a new idea.
Yes, and after 3 years and 2 million listens, we are back with a Power Fact Season 5.
With hard-hitting questions and life-changing books.
So let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. So on this episode, we are going to be speaking to two writers who have written powerful stories inspired by the Indian Army and the people who have sacrificed their lives protecting our country.
Yeah, so let's begin with the first book, which is Operation Payback by Aditi Kumar. It's actually a fictional account of a Veer Nari, or an army wife who actually joins the army in order to avenge her husband's death. So Meera, who is an IT engineer, she's actually happily married to Captain Ranvijay, and everything goes downhill when Ranvijay is actually killed by a terrorist. Now, what does Meera do, right? Does she remarry? Does she give up on life? No, but instead she joins the army as an intelligence officer. And what happens then? Does she actually end up avenging her husband's death? We'll find out.
And the other book that we are going to be speaking about is called Nowhere Man by Shivalik Bakshi. And it's a non-fiction account of Bakshi's own uncle who went missing and was presumed dead in the 1971 Indo-Pak War. And even though no one from his battalion had seen him get killed and no one had been able to locate his body, the military declared him missing, believed killed. But 6 years after the war, the Indian government changed its mind. The Ministry of External Affairs announced in Parliament that Indian intelligence agencies have reason to believe that Pakistan had not been truthful when it handed over the list of Indian prisoners of war in its custody. And it went on to state that the names of at least 40 Indian soldiers were still believed to be in Pakistan's custody. And one of the names was Kamal Bakshi. And the book has been written by his nephew, Chivalik, who's here with us today. And it's very interesting because it's a story recreated from letters, diaries, recollections of those who's passed, crossed paths with him, the last people who ever saw him. And, you know, I mean, we wonder what, you know, ever happened to him and would we see him again. So welcome, Aditi and Chivalik. Very excited to speak with you today.
Thank you so much. Very happy to be here.
Yes, very excited. You know, and especially because of the topic, right? Like, we know that there's a big demand for stories about the armed forces in India, right? And actually Penguin, you know, it's very interesting. They have launched a new imprint called Penguin Veer, you know, on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of India's independence. And, you know, they just wanted to publish stories under this imprint to sort of commemorate India's long established armed forces legacy, right? So now with films, we have seen so many successful films like, you know, Yuri. Then you also have Razi, which is actually based on a book called Calling Sehmat, which is a true account of an Indian raw agent. And, you know, based on her father's request, she's actually married into a family of military officers in Pakistan. You know, so it's very, very interesting. I think there are a lot more movies. And now since both of you have written about the Indian Armed Forces with so much passion, you know, though the storylines, motives are quite different from each other. Let's unpack this passion, right? When did your fascination for these stories about the Indian Army actually begin?
So I am married to an army officer. I'm a complete civilian girl with, so my knowledge before getting married, my knowledge of army was constricted to the movies, like to Bollywood, right? Border, LOC. And that was my patriotism. And I was like, yay, army. And whenever I'm from Rajasthan. So whenever we saw troops on their, now I know what they call them, right? So on EWTs or on exercises or something, we would wave to them. But that was about it. Nobody from army, no background. When I got married, when I met him and then eventually got married, my life completely changes. I was from the media, from the advertising background. And from Aditi, I became Mem Saab. And from the problems of what will we, where will we go out to eat today in Gurgaon, the problems became, there is no connection. I haven't seen the husband in 2 weeks, can't speak to him. And, you know, and this is like way back in 2006, 2007, 2008, right? that is where it completely hit me that I have been an avid reader all my life, and I've depended on books a lot to guide me to, yeah, kind of, or maybe as an escape, right? But here I was in a completely entirely new land, when in the grand and mysterious world of army wives, and I knew nothing about it. It was great, but it was also overwhelming, and it was inspiring, but I also wanted to do it right. So I was looking for a book to help me, right, to tell me what it is. And in a contemporary, like, coming of age way, like, you know, not, you know, this is how you should be or whatever. So I couldn't find anything. Apparently there was nothing written. So I decided to write my first book, which is called Soldier and Spice. That is also by Penguin. And that came out in 2013. So that is how I began. And when the book was received very well, I realized that there is, and this is way back, right? 2013. There was not so much happening except border and LOC that I mentioned right now. So I just kind of realized that it's a niche audience, but it is a market that can grow, and these stories, more than anything else, these stories need to be told. So while that was a lighthearted book, I have since then slightly tried to transform myself, and this is now Operation Payback is slightly serious attempt at writing about a strong, impactful and sensitive topic and tell these stories, because although it's fiction, it is inspired by a lot of brave women who have survived as army wives and then have gone on to become war widows, which is what Veer Nari is, and then have decided that, you know what, I want to walk the same path as my husband did, and then after rigorous training have become soldiers and, you know, officers and everything themselves. So that is where my passion comes from living within these people and amongst them, and just, I think, sort of imbibing it from them.
I think the world of women in the army is something that is really fascinating. We had also interviewed Tanushree Poddar, who is an army wife. And she wrote about, you know, cadets, young girl cadets training for the army and all her stories. And it is sort of, you know, I think Michelle and I both related to what you say, because we're sort of like you, like we have no sort of, I don't have any relatives or background of anyone that I know personally in the army, which is why this conversation is so interesting. What about you, Shivalik?
In my case, I am the son of an Air Force officer and the grandson of an Army officer. But I didn't get to experience any of that military life because I was just a year old when my father left the Air Force. But of course, I grew up with all kinds of stories, and that was probably one of my favorite times, sitting with my dad telling him, tell me something, anything about your life before, from the flying days. And that was, you know, so he did fly during the 71. He was a pilot during the 71 war. And so I had stories from there. And then how my parents met, all the stories of them courting. My father was posted in the same location as my mom, and how he would fly over her house just to get a reaction out of her. And one day he got caught by his commanding officer, and he got hauled in. And the officer told him, you know, we know what you're up to. And as for punishment, you won't fly alone. The whole squadron is going to fly over your girlfriend's house. So then, that's what happened the next day. And there were like, you know, seven jets buzzing my mother's house. And I think that's when my grandmother caved in and let my father go out with my mother's house. So, yeah, so that there were so many stories about all that life. So I was just fascinated by the lifestyle, and that was probably my dream, was to join the Air Force. But it didn't work out like that. Things took a different turn. I ended up becoming an engineer. And that lifestyle always stayed in my mind. As for this book, it's sort of unrelated to my interest in the armed forces. This completely came out of the sight. It was so the story is about my uncle, my maternal uncle, my mother's older brother. And I just heard his name mentioned in passing in family gatherings, you know, and that was it for me. It was just a name and a few little bits here and there. And then I wanted to learn more about him. And then something happened. In 2012, my uncle went to a boarding school in Nainital, and it was his 50-year reunion. So all his classmates got together. So they were putting together the invitation list, and they said, oh, let's invite Kamal. And someone said, oh, didn't you know? And apparently some of them didn't know. And but they invited my Masi, and that's how she put me in touch with all of them. I got in touch with them, asked them what they knew about my uncle. I told them I'd love to know something. Tell me a little. They told me a lot. And that led to other things. And I realized, oh, it's not just a name and a person. He actually had a life. He was loved. There was so much more to him. And I just, it just snowballed from there. And that's resulted in this book.
Thanks for both of that. And I think we want to also, you know, discuss which books and movies have also, you know, which we really like. Your stories and even Adhi's stories are so interesting. So many different points of view come across from the army. You know, there's two very different scenarios. So, you know, Aditi, your book is about managing peace at the borders and knowing when an ambush is going to take place, versus Shivalik's book, which is about it's a war account, right? It's about a specific war, one of the deadliest wars in India. And we also get to see different perspectives. So I wanted to know, you know, Shivalik, your uncle, obviously, you know, there's been a lot of speculation on what happened to him, and his narrative kept changing. So, you know, can you give, what was your sort of, you know, last memory of him? And can you tell us why he was added to the kill list and then, you know, to the missing list? So what was, you know, the change in that status? Could you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. So my uncle Kamal, he fought in the 1971 war, and he was posted in a place called Chum, which is on the western border. Of course, there was war going on the both eastern side with which is now Bangladesh, and the western border. He was on the western side, and this was about 4 days into the war, and his post was attacked with an overwhelming amount of force. Like I said, he had two platoons with him, 60 people, and they were attacked by a battalion, which is 600 people, and a squadron of tanks, which is at least like more than 16, 20 tanks. So anyway, things looked pretty bad for him, and he didn't have too many options, and eventually when his post was attacked, he decided to just charge into the enemy, which is what he did. Just that was how he was seen. The last person to see him was this Subedar who was with him, and just before that last moment, he told the Subedar to run to the headquarters to tell the headquarters what was about to happen. And then the Subedar ran towards the back of this post, and he turned around and he saw my uncle leaping towards the enemy with his, you know, with his 10 gun blazing and just charging the enemy. And that was the last sighting of him. And after that, India did manage to recapture that post later in that day. You know, the Indians sent reinforcements, and they did not find his body. No one, of course, had seen him go down. They just saw him charging. And so that's what led to that dreaded telegram that families get from the army saying, your son has been declared killed in action. And then, so that was in December in 1971. And then 7 years later, in 1978, after, you know, my grandparents have moved on and at least trying to start a new life. Yeah, that was really, of course, hard on my grandfather left the army after that. He said he couldn't, I have one of his letters, and he said, I couldn't discharge my duties faithfully. I wasn't in the mental state. So 7 years later, a minister gets up in parliament in Delhi and announces, well, guess what? We've changed our mind. Actually, we believe Kamal Bakshi did not die in battle. He and about 39 other Air Force and Army officers are being held in secret in Pakistan still. So that was, of course, a big shock. And then, of course, how the story went on from there.
Wow, that is such a vivid, really vivid memory, right? The way you described it, it's almost like watching it happen live. You know, I can only imagine what it was like to sort of, you know, witness that, you know, because it's passed down through the generations as a story that, you know, you all know, and you've discovered a lot more through writing this book. So I want to ask both of you, you know, because like you mentioned, Aditi, you grew up by, you know, watching films like LOC and Border and, you know, these typical stories. And Shiv, like even you must have had a very, you know, typical idea of these stories about how people live their lives in the Indian armies, right? And as you said, it's this telegram that arrives. Even I remember watching stories growing up, and it's always this dreaded telegram that arrives to these wives. And then the only way that, you know, wives and these army forces can keep in touch is through love letters. You know, that's something that we have seen growing up. So I want to know, you know, from your experience, how do you think these stories have changed over time? Or have they even changed? Because in today's day, you know, like nobody even talks about letters, right? For example. So how do you think these narratives have changed over the years?
Well, first of all, I am so grateful to my grandparents for preserving all these letters. You know, ever since my uncle was 7 years old, every letter that he sent, my grandparents kept them. So I have letters starting from all that age, all the way through him growing up, and some letters from his army. Not all of them. My grandparents got posted, and unfortunately, a whole bunch got lost at that point. So, but still, so these letters really opened up so much into my uncle's life for me. I don't think my book would have been possible if it hadn't been for these. So I don't really know what happens now. I would imagine it's all emails and WhatsApp messages, and but they are so impersonal in a way, I feel, because you know, to write a letter, you sit down and you put some time aside for that, and that's all you do. You're writing a letter, and you write it very deliberately, and you think about it. And I have these letters from my uncle. He's sitting in Mao, and he's writing to my aunt, and he starts off saying, oh, monsoon time, and it's raining, and the windows open, and the smell of those initial raindrops is wafting in, and it's so rich in just on. So I don't know if someone writes a WhatsApp message like that anymore, or probably doesn't. I can't comment about what things are like in present, but I can definitely tell you that we've probably lost something with art of letter writing not being followed anymore.
Yes. Aditi, have you seen them sort of depicted in stories, you know, be it in Bollywood movies, in books, because you have written books in this genre before?
Yeah. So letters have, I think, always played a big part in the entire Fauji life, the army, you know, life ecosystem, because like I said earlier, it's not easy. They're not easily accessible. There are, so even today, in my limited experience, and why I say limited is because I know about me, my husband, and our friends, and, you know, our units and paltons are that, but that can't go on to talk about everyone. The art of letter writing, as Shivlik said, it's not that, it's not how it used to be, because when you wrote letters, you wrote them with intent, everything. And, you know, for me, for girls from my generation, we would, and I assume it would be true for others as well, we would choose pen colors, we would, you know, use stickers, and we would do scented envelopes and whatnot. And that used to happen initially. Now, so I love writing, like, obviously, I've written books about it. So I do write letters. So I will, but now what's happened is, and in army, by the way, I think it's very cool. So you have to write the APO. It's very cool, right? You don't need a full address and all. And the army post office, the entire postal services do their job. So you have to write APO, whatever number, and then, you know, it goes and it somehow reaches the person with the rank information and everything. So I love that. So we have kind of inculcated that in our daughter as well. But you know what? The frequency is once a quarter. You know, today is the letter writing day. I will take 2 hours to write it, to decorate it and send it to dad, or I will write. But it has all become very quick now. So most of the times I see people just like Shivlik said, like it's WhatsApp or it's maybe emails, but there are still locations and cans and postings where internet is not as easily available as it is to the rest of us, right? I can speak to him for 2.5 hours window in a day, because that's when the connection tower is switched on in that area, which is like, which seems like a different world problems, but yeah, they exist. So, you know, while we are here, I am based in Gurgaon, and, you know, and we're all in good cities, and we know that internet accessibility is great for us. It's still not as great for them. So if it snows, it is down for 2 days. You know, you can't do anything. Also, in terms of, you know, army girlfriends and the entire army, to be army wives tribe, which is a huge tribe, right? I feel for them as well, because, and I keep telling all of them, whoever I get to meet, is write letters, because they are for keeps. See what Shivlik could make out of letters, right? It is amazing. It is for keeps. It's a treasure. It's memories. It's everything together. You can go back to it. You can't, I wouldn't go back to my WhatsApp chat. So I think I would want to tell everyone, please get into writing letters. It's amazing. It's detailed. Also, when you write letters, you also get in touch with yourself and what you're... That is what writing does to you. So while I think it's not there as much as it used to be, let's bring it back if we can.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, exactly what you said, you know, but if you have letters and if you have these written material, you have so, it's so rich, right? You have so much material to make stories out of those and preserve things. And it reminds me of a book that I edited, actually, of letters written by the Indian soldiers in the Indian Army in World War One, and so it's very, very interesting book, you know, for any listeners also interested in army stories. But I also wonder, how has the nature of, you know, like, what do you think about the nature of how stories are portrayed, whether in books or whether in movies? Because, you know, there's so many more movies and books, like Michelle mentioned, Penguin Veer, and there's so many more books and movies coming out nowadays, whether, you know, it's Gunjan Saxena with Janhvi Kapoor, who was based on a real story of the first female, you know, Indian Air Force pilot, which I really like that movie. I think that was one of my favorite army movies after Razi. I think I have a thing for women. I have a thing for women protagonists. So there's a woman protagonist. I really enjoy that. So how do you think the nature of that has changed? You know, the release of Gadar, Sher Shah, all these books coming out. Do you think that there's been a shift in the way that these army stories have been portrayed?
Yeah. So first of all, I 100% agree that there is a lot more coming out and people have a lot more appetite for it. When you compare it from a pure cinematic point of view, right? If you compare movies like from before the 2000s or maybe till the 2000s, they were more dramatized than, you know, so it was more about a dramatic story and it was more about the enemy and us and patriotism and, you know, Veer Gati and stuff like that. And it was great. It made for great, great cinema. But now, what I've been seeing is, and what I've also heard from a lot of people is that filmmakers, first of all, the army has a PR department, and it is always good to get every content vetted by them for the sheer sake of not providing any or not end up putting something out which is not correct, you know, misinformation or anything that is not right, not correct with respect to the army. So that I think is a good practice. Second thing, what I think is a lot of movies these days hire consultants from the army, right? Like when they're making a sports movie, they'll have sports, you know, athletes or whatever, you know, people with strong knowledge about that focused area be on set and advise them. So now in army also, because I remember my husband and his friends and course mates and all, you know, all of us would go watch a movie and they'll, you know, they'll say the uniform is wrong and, you know, why is he wearing a peace uniform in a combat, this thing, and why is he not standing the COs entered and stuff like that. So it was all fun. and the ranking is wrong, or, you know, the bars and the stripes and all. But now, if you see Sher Shah, or if you see the new age movies, they're getting things right. They're getting Uri. Uri had so many things right. I mean, from the uniforms to what do you wear when you're in peace, what do you wear when you're at the headquarters and stuff like that. And these are smaller details, but they make for an authentic storytelling. And I think this is a good practice. So this is obviously changing the storytelling in on screen, in the sense that there is a more closer to reality and less extremely non-human dramatism happening, which also I think allows for real stories, right? Real emotional stories and stuff. Like Razi is a great example of that. Uri is a, like I said, fantastic example. And we'll also see Manekshaw also, the movie is also about to come. So that looks pretty authentic in terms of the dialogue delivery and the body language, right? If a senior officer is standing, then how will the others behave and stuff like that? So I think a lot more details to attention is being paid now, which I think is changing the storytelling and moving it towards making it more authentic while keeping the emotions intact. And I'm all for it. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've seen this. That's a good point, Aditi, that there's more real stories that are coming, and people, I think Michelle and I are going to do an episode actually on this. People are more and more interested in, you know, real stories, because truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, definitely. And I think and you know, this reminds me of our conversation with other authors also on the podcast, Aditi, where, you know, for example, let's say now it's a medical drama, right? If anyone's writing a medical drama, or it's on screen, and doctors will always say, hey, but this is not how things are done, you know? And it's I think in every, I would say industry, or especially when a genre is reliant on something that requires, you know, research, where it requires to be true to what happens, I think, you know, it's important to be authentic, definitely. Okay, so, and I wanted to add one thing, especially the whole section on letter writing and all of that made me very nostalgic. It reminded me that I still have access to the love letters that my parents wrote to each other, even though it was not a love marriage. It was actually an arranged marriage, but my father was in the Gulf and my mother was here. So it took some time to get the visa and all of that. And in that gap, they actually exchanged a lot of letters, which my mom has still kept. So it's really, really interesting to see, because honestly, now I've not seen anybody writing, you know, nobody I know has that. So I do think that it's a fodder for a lot. Who knows, maybe I'll write a book someday like Shivalik and use those letters as inspiration. Anyway.
So yeah, that, I also want to add. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I was just saying that is so cool. It just reminds me of this, you know, this very senior officer who was just getting retired, and we were at their retirement party, and the wife on the, you know, after the party was over, and a few of us were still hanging around. And then she said, you know what, he's not expressive at all. And I'm very expressive. So I've always written him letters, and I have this big collection of letters that I wrote to him, and about 10 letters that he wrote to me. So I asked, then what did he write if he's not expressive? So she said that I was just adamant that if you don't write me, I'm going to stop writing to you. So he would just copy song lyrics and write in his handwriting and send. Sometimes they were ghazal lyrics, sometimes they were song lyrics, and I just found it so romantic, and she has them. So how cool is that?
That's so romantic. Yeah, I remember reading my dad. My dad went to Dune school, to boarding school, and I have all his letters. And they're just so interesting, because you never see your parent as a child, right? And you know, this is my dad at like 13, 14, and I have his letters to his parents, his friends, and the kinds of things. And at the end of one letter, he's written to his parents, please send more tuck, thank you, goodbye, something like that, you know. So I do agree that maybe, and hopefully whoever's listening to this, please, let's all get back to the art of letter writing. It's so precious.
Yes, please.
Yes. And on this note, you know, I want to do a small fun quiz before we, you know, go deeper into this conversation and analyze your books in depth. Okay, so I'll be asking the question. I'll give you three options. So both of you, you're only allowed to pick one. Okay. So yeah. So basically, I think I'll be addressing each of you at once. I've created questions for each of you. Okay. For Shivalik, which was the toughest chapter to write? A, The Approaching Storm. B, The Longest Hours. C, Nowhere Man.
Nowhere Man.
Okay. Aditi, which job would have Meera been terrible at? A, accounts. B, saleswoman. C, mascot.
I think saleswoman, she would just completely not be okay with anything not going as to her plan.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. Shivalik, one mode of communication that you miss. A, handwritten letters. B, phone calls. C, SMS.
Oh, handwritten letters.
Okay. I think that was quite obvious. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Aditi, one destination which is your favorite and as well as Meera's favorite. A, Pune. B, Mysore. C, Kashmir.
Kashmir, hands down, any day.
Yes. And for all our listeners, to give you all context, so a big part of the book is actually set in Kashmir. And we'll be finding out more on that. Yes.
So, you know, like given the world that we're living in, where there is so much war, there's so much death, and there's so many graphic details that, you know, are coming on the media. And they're also, you know, being written about and sensationalized and shown on screen. So, you know, my question is, how are we sort of, you know, getting desensitized? Do you think we're getting desensitized in a way to suffering and pain and all these stories that are coming out as you know, these army stories that are coming out as entertainment, which might even glorify violence? So how do we sort of manage that and, you know, make readers care and sort of go beyond the superficial and understand the nuances of, you know, the issues at hand? What do you both think?
I think we just need more of these stories. I'm sure there's a lot in the news and you just see the headlines, but behind each headline, there's so many sub-stories, and sure, you see destruction, but I'm sure that soldier has a family and that soldier has people back home too. And if he's just walking around with a gun, that there's a lot more to what's going through his mind and his family's mind and why he ended up in that position. And there's a person behind that in that uniform. You know, it's not just there blowing things up. So I just think we need to get past those headlines and just go deeper and deeper into understanding. There are always two sides to a story. We need to understand both sides, but deeply and not superficially.
I 100% agree with Shivalik here that we need more stories and not just as you know, as sensationalized headlines or where we read bite-sized information and say four lines and we get the gist of it. No, we need to know more. That's why I always have been saying that, you know, we need more stories about the army and not just about the ones on the you know, line of control or wherever their action is, but also back home, because I'm an army wife. People, they mean so much and they really move my heart. You know, something like, she who waits also serves. So she's holding the fort back there. It's a force behind the forces, right? And it's not just the wife, the kids. The kids are so resilient and, you know, they know there's so many birthdays missed. They know so many PTMs missed. And it's all right because, you know, they know that there is a sense of duty, not just in the father, but in them. Not just in the husband, but in the wife. Not just in the son, but in the mother and the father. And I think the more we get more stories around that one, you know, isolated. When we see a soldier as an isolated entity, a lot of us, yes, it might be, you know, a desensitizing thing when we see a lot of it. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, they signed up for it. But when you know that soldier is not just one isolated entity, they are a person, they have families depending on them, they have bills to pay, they have dreams, they want to travel maybe, they're all, you know, look, waiting for their chutti or for that letter to come in or something like that. And it just makes them more human. And I think the emotion, the Hindi word for this is jazba, the jazba of, you know, the emotion of putting duty before anything else is... When you see it in in conjuncture to everything else, then you see the whole person and the whole family. And I think that is when you are sensitive enough as a reader or as a, you know, audience to a piece of content that, yeah, there is a lot going around and this is not somebody signed up for. And while we do say that army or the forces is not a profession, it's a calling. But also, you know what, I'm an army wife. I did not get any training. I did not go to the OTA to train myself for it. I, you know, we're learning on the go of how to deal with separations and no connections and, you know, everything else. But the more people know about these stories, I think the more sensitized they would be that it is an entire ecosystem. It's not just one fantasy person or entities that are going there and fighting or violence or whatever there is. So I think, yeah, we need more stories.
Yeah, and you know, that's the common thread that I liked between both of your books, that it actually focused on the families, right? It's the family's point of view. So in Shivalix, it's the nephew who's talking about the uncle. In your book, it's the wife talking about, and that made me really think about whether we have a support system for, you know, Veer Naris, for example, who are the war widows. You know, like you said, you know, we don't know the stats, we don't know how common it is, but like you said, there's a whole group, there's a whole bunch of women like this, right? So, and you have actually acknowledged them in your acknowledgements, right? I really loved that they were literally in the first line of it. And you've said, you know, this is like a tribute to Veer Naris, you know? So I just want to know, can you please tell us, maybe share an anecdote with us of you approaching a Veer Nari, you know, probably a moving tale. And what did you learn about them that you did not know before? Because I'm sure that a lot came through the research as well.
You know, it's a, I'm sitting here talking, and since the book has come out, you know, a month or so back, I've spoken a lot about it. But it's not easy. You know, my husband's still serving, right? It's not easy because, you know, the person who's sitting next to you in a ladies' meet or at an army party, you know, when the husbands are back after an exercise of 2 months or whatever. And, you know, next time in a few months, she could be a different section, which is a Veer Nari. And that has happened. That has happened to me. That has happened to a lot of us. The entire Army Wife tribe knows that this is not a easy or a light subject to deal with. It's so the Army takes care of its own. So Army has a robust ecosystem for helping Veer Naris, supporting, being there. But also, it is a huge population. Like I wrote in my book, it might not seem like a war, but what's going on at the borders is almost like that. Every day we hear of something happening, something on some unfortunate incident. So the tribe of, you know, people who've lost their loved ones, their husbands, their sons, their, you know, fathers, to terrorism or to violence is increasing every day. So there are too many of you know, of Veer Naris and everything around. One anecdote, you know, I'll give you two. One is, it's on my own. I heard this from someone I really respect a lot, and she's written a lot about Indian Army as well. About Veer Naris as well. So there was a village, there was a unit regiment that was posted somewhere in Rajasthan, and the GOC of the area, the, you know, the one of the top ranked officers of the area came to know that there is a village only consisting of Veer Naris, war widows, close by at some few kilometers. So he sent people there to figure out. Turns out it was an entire village of old, you know, mid-age to really old Veer Naris who were just sent away by their families, who were not given the villages, Aspaske villages had, you know, the nearby villages had sent them there. And they were just living. They had no support system. They all wore, because it was Rajasthan, it was a particular community, they were all wore black. And sometimes an NGO would come, or sometimes somebody's relatives would come and bring them food. But, you know, the story was somebody else was taking the pension. They were not from the husband and were not taking care of them. And then the GOC saw this, and he, you know, completely changed the scenario, reached out to the government, the army helped, and then, you know, they were taken care of. But that is the stage. You know, I come from the army officers, you know, side of the things, where most of us, all of us are educated and we know our rights and the family situation is, you know, all right. But there are Jawan wives, there are OR wives who are extremely well educated, but it is not easy for a woman in our country to, or any country, I don't know about, you know, that to fight for their right when you're already going through something, probably your biggest grief in your life, right? So you're dealing with grief, then you're also dealing with, you know, legal situations. And so, you know, I think while there are systems, we need it needs they need to be enforced more, and these people, you know, all these families need to be taken care of more. One someone I knew very closely during one posting, the husband just you know was martyred in Kashmir, and it was last week we had met them, and then, you know, in a somewhere in the Kent, and then next week she was there, and she was just telling me one day that I can't believe I'm the Veer Nari that we used to, you know, go and arrange things for now. So this is how life quickly changes. And yeah, so I just hope that, you know, this, I'm just bringing it back. Why I chose to write about this was that I was very inspired by women who've dealt with this, who've dealt with the grief, who've dealt with no closure, because you would never know what exactly happened. You don't know. Sometimes it's a closed casket situation. You don't even get to see the body because it's mutilated or it's not in the situation to be, you know, shown. So then what do? You have no closure and you have no right story. You always keep wondering what happened. Was it true or, you know? And then to have that next level courage to say, you know what, I'm going to walk the same path. I'm going to, you know, honor his legacy, because the two Veer Naris who've joined army that I know personally, who have inspired me a lot, they just gave the almost the same answers when I'd asked them, you know, separately, is why? Why this? Why would you join a profession that took your husband away? And in different words, the answers were same, that, you know, it was his purpose and I want to just honor it. And that itself to me is huge, and I wish more people know about it and more people are aware about it, so that as a society we can, you know, gather enough support for them.
That's very interesting. And I think that the theme of, you know, grief and closure and not knowing, I think those are themes that are also very much present in Shivalik's book, because, you know, you have that emotion of a family member who you don't know what's happened to him. And what I really liked about that book is that it's from so many different points of view. So you have, you know, people who gone to boarding school, with Kamal, you know, you've had the family members talk, you've had the last people to see. So I wanted to also know, you know, about some of those accounts and the process of getting those people to talk. So in the book, for example, you mentioned that one of the last people to see your uncle before the war was his own brother-in-law, Atul Bakshi, who was a glass artist. So what was that process of, you know, getting all of these accounts? And in the process, I'm sure you learned things, you know, that maybe your family hadn't told you in the stories, or you had a completely different view of your uncle's personality. So what was that?
So yeah, that's how my project started off, was first trying to just find people who knew him, knew Kamal, and just, you know, get them to share. And people are different. Some people were very forthright and send me pages and pages of information. And there's some people who, you know, they're not talkers. And getting them to open up was spend a lot of time there, just trying to approach them over several months and trying to open up. In some cases, I realize people just, they have a lot to say. They just like to meet you in person. They just don't want to. So, you know, I made some trips over, and that was amazing. Just showing up and face to face. So I learned so much. My parents learned. So my mother, sure, they knew their brother, but they didn't really. There's so much more to a person. There's so many sides to it, and I mean, there's so much information I was able to pull together, and they were like, "Oh, you know, we didn't know that about him." So it was you know, very enriching process and very gratifying process. Did I answer all your questions? Did I miss
So did you
something?
find out anything? You know, could you give us an instance where you found out anything, or a story you know, from the book that portrays your uncle in a way that you didn't know before?
Oh, so many. Well, I'll tell you the first story that I mentioned about him when he's 11 years old. He's around 11. He's in a boarding school. And they're being taught history. So I heard the story from my uncle's first friend in school who knew him really well. So he says, and this friend's amazing. It's been, what, 70 odd years, and he remembers every little detail. So they've been taught history in school, and the book they were assigned was written by some Englishmen, and it talked about the British conquest of India over time. And in this book, you know, all the parts about the British victories were presented as very brilliant military strategies and as a result of these, of bravery. And all the, if there were any Indian victories, then they were like, just considered like, oh, they were just bloody massacres and there was probably a crime. And they, all these boys, they were 11 years old and listening to this. And out of everyone in class, it's Kamal who stands up and tells the teacher, sir, no, that's wrong. That's a wrong portrayal of history. You know, you can't say that. So to have this guy, the only guy who stands up at age 11, and you see his sense of right and wrong and his moral compass. And then I have stories going all the way till, you know, he's 25. And you can see a complete direct connection between how he is then and how he is when he's in his battalion in a meeting with senior officers or brigadiers, and he's the one who speaks up. So yeah, that story was an interesting one for me.
Yes, yes. No, and I wanted to say that that was actually one of the scenes that really stayed with me, because it really shows the innocence of a child. It also shows how, you know, you have a conscience, and it's sort of like you said, you know, the moral compass, it starts very early on. And I think that's a very good memory to have of someone to sort of understand them better, you know, because not all of us have access to our own parents or grandparents or even uncle aunties, you know, past stories. You don't know how they were back in school, but it was very interesting to see this, you know. And I think just going back and seeing everyone's journey, you know, for example, in Aditi's book, I think for me, the most exciting or the most interesting part was the end of the book, Aditi, because it was very inspirational, right? I don't want to spoil it for our listeners, but I do want to say that it is, like, you can say, one step ahead of what we are right now. It's a very inspiration for women as such, right? So just to, you know, give everyone context, though your book covers women, men, all of that, it definitely has a female protagonist who's trying to do something different, right? And what is doing something different is literally being in a combat role, because we know that women are not allowed in combat roles. And actually during, you know, for the research for this podcast, Tara and I found out that there are over 7,000 women persons who are currently serving in the army, right? So I want to know, Aditi, you know, especially to do with women's roles in the army, right? Is being in combat still a very distinct, I would say very far, sort of far-sighted thing for women? Or is it something that you think will happen in the near future? And what are the roles that are usually given to women?
Okay, so disclaimer first, I'm not the right person to talk about it. This is just my opinion. But the Indian Army has made progress with the government and, you know, leaps and bounds in the recent years. And now we have women commanding officers, and, you know, there was a time when women officers would not go beyond lieutenant colonel, but now they're commanding units, they're commanding their own, you know, platoons and battalions and units. So it is progress. In terms of combat, it to me, to, you know, a non-soldier, it sounds like, you know, it's very easy for me. It's a very easy answer that yes, it should happen, and it should happen as of yesterday. But obviously, it's a process, so I'm sure they're going to do it. But as I've ended my book, this is my hope that it happens soon, because in my head, and I'm sure a woman, a soldier would might have a different, you know, take on this. But in my head, if somebody's going through that rigorous training, if somebody's, you know, giving up on a lot of other things or perks, as people can call them, which is, you know, living in a metro city, internet connectivity, closer to your loved ones, and, you know, money, or 100 other things that can be listed. Why would someone go for it? It's pure passion, right? And it's a larger calling, or it's a purpose, and they're cut from a different cloth. So I would want to believe that this is the end goal, that I would, after all this, I'm gonna go and be where the action is, rather than hang around at the sideline. But that said, women in the forces have extremely important roles right now. Like I said, they are commanding already. I don't know how much of it will change and how soon, but we, from what we read and from what we hear, senior officials talking, it is on its way. So let's hope it happens soon.
Right. Yes. Fingers crossed. Another thing that I was very curious about with both of your books is the fact that it's about the army, right? And we do know that a lot of this is very confidential stuff, right? Like, we do know that, let's say, the raw, whatever raw agents do, it's pretty confidential. Nobody knows who are the agents, what they do. Or then we also did an episode with Mr. Hussain Zaidi where he covers the life of a raw agent, right? So keeping in mind that it's a super confidential topic and all of that, I was very curious to know. And as you said, Aditi, there are authenticity checks and they make sure that everything happens. I want to know if any of y'all sort of went through a check, especially with Shivalik, where it was not really direct, whether you sort of encountered any kind of challenge in order to do that. So, for example, the people that you spoke to, right? One of the personnel actually was with your uncle at the battlefield, right? So was he allowed to really divulge all that information? Because I was really curious to know about that. Though the war happened really back then, right? In the 1970s, is that something that, let's say, any of the army personnel are allowed to divulge after, let's say, even after years have passed?
In general, army people don't like to talk much about their what happened, especially in a war. So that was a challenge, definitely, getting them to open up. Actually, what worked in my favor was this happened 50 years ago. So, this is not something that's happening now. So that definitely helped. For sure, even what they told me, I'm sure there was so much more they could have told me, which they chose not to, which I totally understand. And I didn't want to pressure them into. What worked in my favor was there have been a lot of books that have come out recently in the last few years about this war from both the Indians and the Pakistani side. In fact, I even reached out to the Pakistani officers who were at that battle, and some who actually even attacked my uncle's post that night. I even communicated with them, and they were very courteous and very polite, and I'm so grateful to them for what they told me. So I think that helped, just having information from both sides, and then going back to the Indian officer saying, I do know this, I found this out, do you have? And then they felt, okay, maybe we can share a little bit more. So it was a back and forth.
That's very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit more about the conversations with the Pakistani officers and what they had to say?
So this was over email and WhatsApp. We didn't actually talk on the phone, but it was just like our men, and a lot of them were, my uncle, we're Punjabis, and so were the Pakistani officers. And I have there's some stuff I got from the book, and they followed up was they talked to their soldiers in Punjabi too. And there's a story about, and this Pakistani officer, he wrote this in his book. So they're attacking the Indians, and that, the tank driver is going off course, and he's telling the tank driver, "Abe gade, seedhe chala, tumhe tank kisne sikhaya chalana?" So this is the Pakistani officer talking to his thing, and I'm like, oh my God, here you think of war and the other side just being demonous, and they just like you. So it was it really opened up this whole new dimension for me to see how things were from both sides. And no, they were very forthcoming.
I don't recall, was that in the book as well, the Pakistani officers' narratives?
I did not get into the book too much in the book.
Okay,
about that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
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 Was there any reason for that, or
Shivalik, there's a different book in there, huh? I mean, that is so, my mind is like just going in that direction now. That is so cool.
You know, I did not go into that because the way the situation is between the two countries, I didn't want to put them in the spot. I didn't want to make their life difficult in any way. So it was more out of my consideration for them that I didn't. But that's the only reason.
It is. It's a precarious situation. And what books about the army do you like to read? What are your favorite army books or movies?
So right now I'm reading a book on Veer Naris by Mrs. Ambreen Zaidi. It's a great read. If somebody's interested, please, you can pick it up. I also am reading Kitne Ghazi Aaye Kitne Ghazi Gaye by General Dhillon, which I also gifted to my father, who loved it. Then there is the Shiva Roor, Rahul Sharma's book, which is which is a collection of short stories and real accounts by real people. So that was my go-to book to inspire myself when I was writing this one, the current one, because it's very fast-paced and it tackles action scenes nicely. And because it's obviously, it has to be, because it's real, they've written it very well and they're real incidences. So these three come to my mind right now.
Hey, then what about you, Shivalik? What is your favorite book about the army?
Well, for the last 3-4 years, I was only reading army books. Just getting into the research. And I wouldn't say I have any one favorite book, but of course, if anyone's more interested in this battle, the Battle of Chum, which was turned out to be one of the biggest battle of the 1971 war, then there are books by Major General Sandhu called The Battle of Chum. And then and there's also a book, and then there are books from the Pakistani side, like I mentioned, Battleground Chum, which is by Major Lieutenant Colonel Saeed from the Pakistani side. And then there's Forged in the Furnace of Battle by Major General Ali. So all fascinating books, just knowing this battle and seeing it from all different angles from both the sides. I just really love that. And I just digging up more and more information of it from all around. So to answer, I don't have one favorite book, but...
Oh, okay, nice. Now I have a lot of recommendation to check out, because actually after reading both of your books, I do want to sort of explore more into the genre. Also check out the whole Penguin Weir imprint. So there's definitely a lot to catch up on. Okay, so this brings us to the last round of the podcast, which is called the Rapid Fire Round. You have to answer in one word or one sentence, okay?
Do we get a hamper?
No, we don't get a hamper, but we'll clearly declare a winner.
All right. Works.
Okay. One place you want to visit next?
Arunachal.
What are the odds? I was going to say Arunachal.
Wow.
Tawang, especially Tawang, yeah.
Yeah, me too. My uncle mentioned that place in his letters.
My husband, my father-in-law and my husband also.
Wow. Yeah.
Bomdila. He mentioned a place called Bomdila, I think.
Yes.
So it was exchanged between my Masi and my uncle. And my uncle's like, oh, sounds wonderful. I'm going there next. So I want to go there too.
That is so cool. Yeah.
So one family member who has played a big role in your career.
My husband.
My wife.
Okay. All right. One Bollywood film based on the army that you can watch again and again without getting tired.
Lakshya. Also Uri. I love it.
I love Uri too.
Yeah.
Border, but that's an old movie. I haven't seen any of the newer ones.
They've just announced, Shivlik, that they're gonna do Border 2. So be ready.
Oh, thank you.
I read somewhere.
You. Okay.
I like the song.
Oh, sorry.
No, the song was really nice. So.
Yeah.
What are you both writing next?
I am just breathing because the book has just come out. But I want to, you know what? I know it's rapid fire. Just please hear me out. The first book was fun and lighthearted and yet emotional. The second one was slightly different, slightly more emotional. This one is like serious. I want to tackle the subject of disabled soldiers and their lives next. But let's see. It again requires a lot of research, but that is what I hope for.
Wow, superb. Yeah, looking forward to reading it. Very important topic.
I'm still working on the plot line, but it'll be a work of fiction because I've realized with nonfiction, you really are constrained in what you can write, constrained by your subject. So I want to write something where I can let my imagination run wild.
See, I figured this out. I've only been writing fiction, so they're inspired by true events. But fiction, because there is only that way you can share a lot of things, and you can share a lot of, you can put closure with, because why would you write a story where, people do, so in fiction, you know that this is a good closure, this is an impactful lesson and stuff like that. So yeah, mine is also going to be fiction like this one, but everything else around, the setting is going to be true, but the characters are going to be fictional.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yay, go fiction. I'm a big fiction fan, so I'm really looking forward. But so this brings us to the end of the episode. I wish we could, go on and on, but there's so much to unpack when it comes to army stories. I think I learned a lot, and I really love your passion that you have for the genre. I'm really looking forward to more books. Thank you so much for speaking to us today. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity too. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dara. Thank you, Michelle. It was great.
So here we are. We're at the end of yet another journey into the many worlds of books and beyond with Bound. I'm Tara Khandelwal.
I'm Michelle DeCosta, and this podcast is created by Bound, a company that helps you grow through stories. Find us at Bound India on all social media platforms.
So tune in every Wednesday if you live, eat, and breathe books. And join us as we discover more revolutionary books and peek into the lives and minds of some truly brilliant authors from India and South Asia.
And don't forget to keep your love for stories alive for books and beyond.